Mana Shari Jaya Vada Madhava Kunjabi Hari Janam Vishnabhad Paramahansa Jishi Mata Divine Grace Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Bibidi Bandacharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnabhad Paramahansa Pradavajikacharya Sota Visita Jishi Mata Hajadas Taku Kijai. Prem Sikaho, Shikrishna Chaitanya Pabuna Chananda Shad Vaita Gridar Shivasari. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Kijai. Shishi Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shamakunda Radha Kunda. Girigavadan Kijai. Vrindavan Dham Kijai. Nabadip Mayapur Dham Kijai. Ganga Jamunamai Kijai. Tulasi Devi Maharani Kijai. Bhakti Devi Kijai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai. Harinam Sankirtan Kijai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Angad. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 7, Text 29. Yeah, no, it is. I'm just waiting for it to come up on the board there. So everybody can... Well, I'll start chanting, and they're simple, short lines. So, Varnashrama Vibhagamscha, Varnashrama Vibhagamscha, Rupa Shila Swabhavataha, Rupa Shila Swabhavataha. Rishinam janma karmani. Rishinam janma karmani. Vedasya cha vikarshanam. Vedasya cha vikarshanam. Vanashrama vibhagamscha. Rupa Shila Swabhavataha Rishinam Janma Karmani Vidasya Cha Vikarshanam. Vaishnavis? Huh? Okay. Varna Ashrama. The four divisions of social statuses and orders of spiritual culture. Vibhagan. Respective divisions. Cha. also. Rupa, personal features. Shila Swabhavataha, personal character. Rishinam, of the sages. Janma, birth. Karmani, activities. Vedasya, of the Vedas. Cha, and. Vikarshanam, categorical divisions. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O great sage, kindly describe the divisions and orders of human society in terms of symptoms, behavior, and the characteristics of mental equilibrium and sense control. Also, please describe the births of the great sages and the categorical divisions of the Vedas. Purport. The four statuses and orders of human society, dash, brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, as well as brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, are all divisions of quality, education, culture, and spiritual advancement attained by practicing control of the mind and the senses. All these divisions are based on the particular nature of each individual person, not on the principle of birth. Birth is not mentioned in this verse because birth is immaterial. Vidura is famous in history as born of a Sudrani mother, yet he is more than a Brahmana by qualification because he is seen here to be the disciple of a great sage, Maitreya Muni. Unless one achieves at least the brahminical qualifications, one cannot understand the Vedic hymns. Mahabharata is also a division of the Vedas, but it is meant for women, sudras, and dvijabandhus, the worthless children of the higher section. The less intelligent section of society can avail themselves of the Vedic instructions simply by studying the Mahabharata. Omagina Timananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dirati Swapadantikam. So this is Vidura speaking to Maitreya. He's asking a question. And Prabhupada says here in the purport about talking about the four statuses and orders of human society. And he mentions that all are divisions of quality, education, and spiritual advancement attained by practicing control of the mind and the senses. So that's the first, what I think is important point in this purport, that these different, particularly the varnas, you know, whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, that's determined by, or attained, as Prabhupada uses that word, by how well or not so well you practice control of the mind and the senses. And it goes on in this purport to, you know, Prabhupada makes the point that all these divisions are based on the particular nature of the individual person, not on the principle of birth. In other words, whether somebody's a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, that should be determined by their qualification. And not by their birth. And that qualification is determined by, as Prabhupada points out here in the purport, how well a person or how well they don't practice control of the mind and control of the senses. In other words, to the degree that somebody doesn't control their mind and doesn't control their senses, to that degree they're going to be in a lower status of life. You know, Krishna says in the, in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there are three gateways that lead to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And every sane man has to try to avoid those because they cause the degradation of the soul. So everybody has a free will, a certain amount of free will. And, you know, how a person uses their free will determine, you know, and how they deal with those forces, lust, anger, and greed, that's practical application of what's meant by controlling the mind and the senses, and that'll determine how they are interact with the modes of material nature and how they'll be influenced by the modes of material nature, and consequently, that will ultimately determine what varna they find themselves in, or should. You know, somebody who's in predominantly in the mode of ignorance, because they could be born in a Brahmin family, but if they're, you know, behaving, using their free will in such a way that they, you know, influenced predominantly by the mode of ignorance, then they're really a sudra. That person's a sudra. And vice versa. Somebody could be born in a family of sudras, but if they exercise a admirable extent of practicing, you know, control of the mind, the control of the senses, then that person is elevated. They've elevated themselves, and they, for all practical purposes, they're a Brahmin. And Prabhupada goes on to explain here that birth, this is determined not on the principle of birth. He says birth is not mentioned in this verse because birth is immaterial. See, so the real important thing is, and there's some verse in the seventh canto, I can't remember the Sanskrit pretty much or the English, but it makes the point that this is the determining factor, you know, what the person's quality is, not the person's birth. And Prabhupada gives the example of Vidura. He's famous in history as born of a Sudrani mother, yet he is more than a Brahmin by qualification because he is seen to be the disciple of a great sage, Maitreya Muni. So it's an interesting example, actually, that Prabhupada is using Vidura, because it's true that he was born of a Sudrani mother, but one could say, but wait a second, what about the other side of the family? Now, his mother was a Sudrani, but his father was Vyasadeva. So he must have got some pretty good genes there because his father was Vyasadeva. But still, then the counter argument is, but also Dhritarashtra was an offspring of Vyasadeva, correct? Dhritarashtra is also an offspring. Yeah, so, you know, he didn't turn out like Vidura. So, you know, Vidura, it's quite right to use him. And as an example, he established himself. He had these qualities. And therefore, he was able to, as Prabhupada says, he'd be more than a Brahmin. Because he's a special case, special example. But in general, that's the point, that everybody has this opportunity, even as Prabhupada goes on to explain in the purport here, that even those like who are in the lower status, women, Vaishyas and Sudras, or Prabhupada refers to the Dvija Bandhus, the worthless children of the higher section. So, you know, those are people who are born in families, higher families, twice born families, but they don't take advantage of it. You know, they don't take advantage of the opportunity. So Prabhupada refers to them as worthless children of the higher sections. But still, there's an opportunity there for them to have spiritual life, because it's pointed out here that they can avail themselves of the Vedic instructions simply by studying the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata's kind of an interesting Vedic literature because mostly it's story. You know, it's history. And it's like there's war, there's romance. But in there, tucked in there, there's the Bhagavad Gita, which is spiritual instruction. So, you know, people who aren't interested in philosophy, so to speak, so much, and, you know, might not be attracted by the Vedanta Sutra, they will be attracted to, you know, get absorbed in the Mahabharata. And it's kind of like, you know, in the process of getting absorbed in all the politics and the romance and whatever, they also get the spiritual instruction of Bhagavad Gita. So they, you know, get a chance to get benefited there. So the real idea here is that, you know, the bigger point that's, you know, being alluded to, not specifically stated here, is that, you know, human life is an opportunity to perfect oneself, right? Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, see here. Yeah, Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, he says, everyone has a particular relationship with the Lord, and that relationship is evoked by the perfection of devotional service. But in the present status of our life, not only have we forgotten the Supreme Lord, but we have forgotten our eternal relationship with the Lord. Too bad. But he goes on to say, every living being out of many, many billions and trillions of living beings has a particular relationship with the Lord eternally. Makes the point again. That is called Swarup. By the process of devotional service, one can revive that Swarup. And that stage is called Swarup Siddhi, perfection of one's constitutional position. So that is the goal. That's what we want. We want to achieve Swarup Siddhi. And it's done, Prabhupada says here, by the process of devotional service, one can revive that Swarup. And that stage is called Swarup Siddhi. And that's open for everyone. When you get a human a body, you have it's like you've been given a ticket. You know, you have a ticket. You're holding a ticket to get on the plane, you know, to take up this process of devotional service. There's no material disqualification. I think just this past Sunday we heard Prabhupada quote that famous verse from the second canto, fourth chapter, I forget, maybe text 18 of the Bhagavatam, Kiyarata Hunanda Pulanja Pukasha, Abirya Sumba Yavana Kasadaya, Yene Chapapa Yadapashraya Shraya, Sujanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha. That the first two lines of that verse are naming different races which are considered social outcasts. They're outside the Vedic culture, right? But the verse goes on to say that even those races of people, and yene cha papa, even more sinful, even races that are more sinful, you know, yada pashraya shraya, that if they take shelter of the pure devotee of the Lord, Shujanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha, by the power of Vishnu, because the pure devotee is representing Vishnu. So by that power, by the mercy of the Lord and his pure devotee, they can be elevated. You see? So the opportunity is there for everybody to be elevated. And it's just up to, it's up to every individual. It's up to every individual. It's not like it's, you know, we hear in the Bhagavad Gita, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha Ahankara Mutatma. Kataram iti manyate, that the bewildered spirit soul under the influence of the modes of material nature thinks himself the doer, but he's of activities which are actually carried out by the modes of material nature. And also in the third chapter, there's that verse, nahi kaschit shanam api jatu tishtati akarmakrit prakriti, how's it going? Sarva prakriti jagranais. I skipped a line there. But it goes, all men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the three modes of material nature. No one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So one might think, well, where's the hope? You know, it sounds like, when you read the Bhagavad Gita, it sounds like, you know, we're just being controlled by the modes of material nature. Well, but if that was totally the case, what would be the point of devotional service? No, there's a loophole. And that's, Krishna explains what that is in the seventh chapter. He says, Daivyeshu gunamayi mama maya durachaya mameviye papajante mayami tam tarantite, that the three modes of material nature, this divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, he says is durachaya. I think Prabhupada might translate it as insurmountable, but the word durachaya and the word for translation is, he translates it difficult to overcome. Dura means very difficult to overcome. So it's not impossible, but it is very difficult. And Krishna himself gives the secret how to do it. He says, Mameva ye papajante, mayami tam tadantite. One who surrenders unto me can cross beyond it. See? So in general, yeah, people are controlled by the modes of material nature. We're under the modes of material nature. But surrender is the opportunity. And everybody has the chance to surrender. And surrender is not, just like getting out of the modes of material nature is not black and white, surrender is not black and white. It's not like, you know, you're either in or you're out. It's not like that. It's not. I don't think anyway. It's not like you're totally surrendered. It's shades of gray. It's not black and white. See, and this is how my understanding of how it works. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a very nice purport where Prabhupada talks about intelligence, and this is what he says about intelligence. He says intelligence gives one direction, like some higher authority. And the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man. And so a living being is dependent on intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living entity has his intelligence, and this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority who is present and residing within every individual living being is the super self. So in other words, what's going on is, in the body there's the soul, that's us, and there's the super soul. And when you come to the human form of life, as I said, this is the opportunity to, take up devotional service and go back to Godhead. So Krishna's there. Krishna's there with us. And, Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, he says he's aware of the psychic movements of every living entity. But it doesn't stop there. It's not like Krishna's just there as a spectator. No. Krishna's there as like a coach. And he's trying to root us on. He's trying to get the living entity to surrender. See, and it's people out there, they're also surrendering or not surrendering to Krishna. The people who aren't, quote-unquote devotees, at every moment of their human form of life, they're either surrendering or not surrendering to Krishna, because Krishna, as the super soul, is giving them intelligence how to elevate themselves, and they can either accept it or reject it. And if they reject it, to the degree that they reject it, when one fails to take advantage of the intelligence, he becomes a deranged man, right? So to the degree that they reject that intelligence that Krishna is giving them as the super soul, they're moving in that direction of becoming deranged. And to the degree that they accept that intelligence that Krishna is giving them, how to elevate themselves, to that degree, they're going back to Godhead. Okay? So, surrender. Those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. So Krishna's there as a super soul. He's giving intelligence. People who take that intelligence, they're progressing. They're progressing. Yeah, I mean, here's another nice paragraph which kind of states this point, makes this point about how Krishna is more than just a spectator. Yeah, he's aware of the psychic movements, but he's a coach. And as Suvas said to Deva Vrata yesterday in a text message, he's rooting us on. He's trying to help. And here's evidence of that. This is from the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the chapter called The Prayers of Gajendra. Prabhupada says, only Krishna can deliver us from this material existence. Okay, well, we all know that. He said, but he goes on to say, indeed, he's always trying to deliver us. So he's not just there spectating. He's trying to deliver us. He's within our hearts and is not at all inattentive. His only aim is to deliver us from material life. He knows his only aim is being there as the super soul. He doesn't come into the material world as the super soul of every living entity to enjoy the rasa dance. Or, he's got Goloka Vrindavan for that. He's here, when he's here as the super soul with every living entity, the purpose is to deliver that living entity from material life and get him out of, back to Godhead. Goes on to say, it is not that he becomes attentive to us only when we offer prayers to him. Even before we offer our prayers, he incessantly tries to deliver us. See, so we're not aware of that. But that's what's going on, according to the Shastra. Even before we offer prayers, Krishna is aware of the psychic movements, and he's planning. How do I get this guy? How do I get this living entity out of this material world? He's trying. So even before we offer prayers to him, he incessantly tries to deliver us. He's never lazy in regard to our deliverance. It's not a bottom priority. He's got it. He's got it. So he's putting some attention onto the whole thing. He's trying to deliver us, and he's doing it. He's not lazy about it. Okay. Then it goes on to say, it's his causeless mercy that he always tries to bring us back home, back to Godhead. So, yeah. So that's a pretty good deal. That we got, Krishna's there, and he's trying. He's trying to elevate us. He's trying to help us, go back home, back to Godhead. So we have to, we have to try to cooperate. That's the point. We have to try to cooperate. And in this purport that I read where, it was talking about intelligence, Prabhupada, later on in that purport, he says, so if we stick to our determination, determination to try to understand who we are, who God is, like it. He says, and pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence. That's what we have to do. We have to pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence. That's Krishna. He's within our heart. He's, of course, he's right there on the altar. He's not different from the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, etc., etc., etc. But he is the director of intelligence, and we have to pray for his mercy because we want to be successful. We don't want to have to come back here as conditioned souls to the material world and have to do this all over again. You know, why? You know, we've already taken trillions of births here in the material world. Why be around for more? We know what's going on here. Actually, Devamrita Swami made an interesting point the other day, though, when he said about, you know, he quoted that, referred to that, what would you call it, phrase or saying, experience is the best teacher, and he made the point that, no, it's not. And he quoted that verse from the second canto, Paschati, you know, how's it go? Deha. Pashanapi napashyati. He quoted that line. Pashanapi napashyati. And as evidence that experience isn't such a great teacher, because pashanapi apashyati. People, they have sufficient experience, but they don't learn. You see? So we don't need to come here anymore. We're not going to learn anyway. But if we haven't learned it by now, we're not. Taking more births is not the way in which we're going to learn. We want to get out of here. And to do that, we have to pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence. Means praying, Krishna, give me the intelligence to, you're trying to help me. You're trying to get me out of this material world. Help me cooperate. Just help me cooperate. Help me, you know, Prabhupada would give that example of that his spiritual master gave of if somebody's in a well and you throw them the rope and, they got to take that rope and tie it around their waist. That much they got to do. And then, so they could be pulled out. So that's what we have to try to do. And, then we'll be saved because, you know, Krishna is trying to save us. If we just cooperate, then there's a big hope that we can finish up our business in this lifetime, okay, and go back to Godhead. But actually, we'd like to do even more than that. You can say, well, what's possible? We'd like to become like Prabhupada, ideally. We'd like to finish up, be serious and sincere enough devotees that in this lifetime we're finishing up our business and going back to Godhead. And in the meantime, we'd like to follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. There's a chapter in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, The Behavior of a Perfect Person. So it's been quite a while since I read it. I can't remember, you know, any details from it, but just that title, Behavior of the Perfect Person, that's Prabhupada. Prabhupada's the standard. Prabhupada is the standard for us, you know, for us modern-day aspiring Vaishnavs. Prabhupada's the standard. He was perfect person. There was that discussion in Mayapur once. They were, you know, devotees were walking with Prabhupada, and they were asking him about, the pure devotee. Does he know everything? Does he know how many windows there are in the Empire State Building or how many hairs there are in the head of some? Prabhupada said, no, you've misunderstood what perfection means, you know. And they quoted a line from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Samsana. You know, I think it was something that Vedacharya said or said about it, Vedacharya. And the idea was that the Acharya or the Acharya is perfect because his only desire is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. See, so that Prabhupada is, as I said, he's the standard. If we could just, in the meantime, you know, okay, let's say we're getting ready to finish our business and go back to Godhead. But in the meantime, while we're still here, let's try to be like Prabhupada. Let's try to follow in the footsteps of Prabhupada and try to help as many other people as possible. Go back, you know, get on the path. Start their program of going back to Godhead as well. You know, that's actually a glorious quality. It's something you have to try to cultivate, but it's a glorious quality. Prabhupada, in 1966, I guess, it was very early on, before Prabhupada, before 22nd Avenue, before the Bower even, when Prabhupada was preaching up on the Upper West Side there. You know, when he was staying with Dr. Mishra and he had that little apartment, or whatever, you couldn't even call it an apartment. It was an office on Columbus and 72nd. And he was giving a Bhagavad Gita class three times a week. So in one of those classes, there was just some, you know, not serious followers at that time, just some people just kind of curious. they were coming along. Anyway, so this lady asked a question. Prabhupada said something, and the lady said, I don't think you're happy here, you know, because she was talking about Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, no, actually, you know, I would like to be, if I was back in my Vrindavan, I would have no, you know, troubles, you know, just, but I'm duty bound, or I'm in duty. You know, he made the point that I'm here because my spiritual master has told me to come here and give you folks a message. So I'm here, and I'm accepting so many inconveniences to be here to do that. So that was Prabhupada. You know, that was Prabhupada. He could have stayed in Vrindavan. He had that room at Radha Damodar Temple. It was only 5 rupees a month. That's not a lot. Those days, even by, I mean, he could have scraped up 5 rupees a month to pay the rent and stay there and experience no difficulty like that. But no, he had the instruction from his spiritual master, and he came, and you know, he accepted a lot of difficulties, inconveniences to, you know, to bring this message to us. So, and of course, he got a lot of, you know, he was really empowered to do it because why? Because he was so sincere. Prabhupada was so sincere and so serious about doing that, that Krishna empowered him. There's that letter Prabhupada wrote to Sudama, where he goes, regarding Krishna's being, he goes, when I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, who will listen to me in this horrible, sinful place? But at least I can distribute a few of my books. That is something. And then he goes, but Krishna was all along planning something I could not see. He brought you young American boys and girls to me one by one for doing the work of Lord Chaitanya. Now I could see it's a miracle. Otherwise, one old man in your city of New York with barely enough money to buy his food, how could he survive? What to speak of starting a God-conscious movement to save the whole human race like that? He says, and he repeated, now I could see it's a miracle. So the point is that Prabhupada was so sincere about following the instruction of his spiritual master that Krishna reciprocated and he gave him a miracle. Basically, you know, he gave him a miracle. Krishna, it's in the fourth canto, it's stated that the pure devotee is always thinking about how to deliver the conditioned souls. And Krishna, being pleased by that, he enlightens the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. See, so that's what was going on. Prabhupada was so sincere that Krishna, from as the super soul within the heart of, he inspired some souls to come forward and take an interest in Krishna consciousness and become his disciples. And in that way, Prabhupada was able to, you know, start a movement and kind of get things going like that. So, yeah, we should try to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. And that's an important expression, follow in the footsteps. You know, nobody's going to be able to do like what Prabhupada did. He's a very special, super special individual. But, yeah, we could try to follow in his footsteps and try to do what we can to become pure devotees and spread the Krishna consciousness movement. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question? That means everybody's in total agreement. I'll take that to mean that. Oh, okay. Garanga Prem, sure.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class. You were saying that if a person falls into the well and he wants to be saved, so he has to put the rope, you know, on himself. That's the part he has to do. So I'm just wondering.
Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj said that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what if that man is seriously injured and unconscious in the well? Can we send somebody down to the well and help him?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose you could, but that's not, in that analogy, which is coming down two generations, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj thought that that wasn't asking too much, that at least that person, he has to take that rope and tie it around his waist. So, Archita Prabhu, yeah.
Well, us. In the analogy, if you take it literally, the people in general are not asleep. They're at least awake, so they can interact with Krishna consciousness voluntarily and go forward. But even if they're asleep, or even if they're in animal form of life, they benefit. That was also spoken by Bhaktisiddhanta. Because some disciples were complaining that, you know, Guru Maharaj, you send us a priest here and there, but sometimes nobody comes. He said, don't worry. There are insects in the wall. They benefit from hearing a vibration. So Krishna consciousness is so potent, it doesn't matter. They could be sleeping, they could be unconscious, they still benefit.
Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Jai.